to my one goodbye. Dolly Parton. And remember, that was a Woody song about an actual event of Mexican Americans who were deported and died in a plane crash. Look it up, Woody Guthrie. And bless Dolly Parton, for she was just naturally brave. She knew that that's the song she wanted to perform. There's a lot of people who should have been performing it, but took it off the list because it was associated with, pardon me, Woody Guthrie. We're joined now by Tony Lea, a uniform member and retiree, and he's the author of The Truth About the 37 Oshawa GM Strike, Baraka Books, and it should be on everybody's shelf. And Tony, we all want to hear about, I guess, first of all, this an agreement to a vote was taken yesterday on a contract with the GM. I'm going to ask you to tell us where are we with that in that process?
Yes, there was a tentative agreement that was voted on, and the members at GM accepted it. There's some wage increases. There's a hope that there will be some job security for people, but it's really very dependent on the broader political and economic context with the tariff battles. And I think that it illustrates to a degree, the short-sightedness of some of our political leaders and union leaders, mm-hmm. that they can only focus on seeing the auto companies, which are foreign companies, as being their solution. They can't think outside of, what we can do to try to cajole or bribe General Motors or Stellantis or Ford to keep some measure of jobs in Canada. And clearly that hasn't worked, because we've seen the devastation of the auto manufacturing industry in Canada, because those companies always make decisions which are in their interests, not in our interests. And that has led to the continual closing of plants and laying off of workers. And every contract seems to be a stopgap to try to protect the jobs that are left, and they continue to be eroded. And mm-hmm. while that's not what anybody would like to see, I'm mm-hmm. not optimistic that that basic issue has been solved by this collective agreement.
Mm-hmm. There was an element there that the issue of reopening plants, and I saw an item on the news that said the company promised the union that if they get a new military, some sort of armament contract, that Canada, a particular plant in Canada, would be prioritized, and we're all supposed to throw our hats in the air. When it seems that, I mean, the U.S. is, and it's those closest to them, are starting to really just head into armaments, which we know usually when countries build up armaments, they end up at war. And but no one even discusses that aspect, do they?
No. It seems to be accepted by our union leadership that military spending, if it leads to jobs in Canada, is a good thing, without considering, that it could be taking us closer to the precipice of really disastrous wars that would be horrible for all of us. And that's, not part of the
consideration. We should remind people that usually it's the workers who go to war and not the executive of the company. You find very few front office people at the front line.
No front office people, no CEOs, no politicians are in the trenches. And in fact, people will remember during the Second World War, when corporations like General Motors and Ford maintained their investments in Germany during the war, because...
And they didn't go broke.
They went the opposite of broke, of course. In terms of the plant you're mentioning, which is the Cami plant in Ingersoll that was employing well over 2,000 workers a few years ago, it was shut down and converted to production of electric commercial vans, which were not very successful. And then GM made the decision to end the production there. The 2,000 workers had been reduced to 1,000 because the new model did not employ as many people, and now they're all unemployed. And what was reported to us about the agreement with General Motors regarding that plant is that we were told GM has no plans to close or sell that plant during the next 3 years of the collective agreement. But if that changes, then they are committed to discussing it with the union. This is of, you know, that's the language that was used, that was reported to us. Mm-hmm. And in terms of the potential military contract, we were told that there's some discussion between General Motors and with the federal government trying to get some military production. And if they do get that contract, that the plant in Ingersoll will be given first consideration.
First consideration. Isn't that great?
That's the language. Yes.
What sort of armament is it? Do you know?
No, we don't know. I mean, it could, my guess would be that at least part of it would be military vehicles.
Military vehicles.
But, and there's currently, you know, some significant production of military vehicles in Canada, including light armored vehicles that are produced in London, which was formerly a General Motors plant. Mm-hmm. And is mostly under the radar. People don't talk about it much, but they're producing, churning out military vehicles for the U.S. and for a number of other countries, including Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. My thought would be that some sort of military vehicle is what they would be considering, maybe along with other things.
Yeah. By the way, there's something I was in looking, doing a little background for this interview. I noticed a term that I wish I'd been using before. The companies that we're dealing with here are called the Detroit Three.
Yes.
We used to say the Big Three or something, but the Detroit Three. Just to underline, these are American companies. So when we talk about our, you know, Canadian vehicles and these American companies. I'd like you to reprise the discussions we've had previous that where do the cars, or vehicles, pardon me, is it vehicles made in Canada, where they are sold, and where do Canadians buy their vehicles? I mean, who's...
Yes, it's a
strange subject once you get into it. Go ahead.
It is, and it's not well understood. There are five companies that build vehicles, assemble vehicles in Canada. Two of them are Japanese, two of them are American, and Stellantis, which at one, you know, subsumed Chrysler, mm-hmm. which was a U.S. company. Stellantis is actually a European country. It's a merger of Fiat and Peugeot, so it's French-Italian. The headquarters are in the Netherlands. So there's five foreign corporations that assemble vehicles in Canada, and over 90%.
Over 90%
of the vehicles that are assembled in Canada go to the United States. And that's the model which has been created by those companies because it's in their interest. They get the most profit by assembling vehicles in Canada where labor costs are lower, and selling them in the United States. And they also focus on the largest, most carbon-intensive and expensive vehicles, because that's where the profit margin is the largest. And so as soon as there's any disruption to that economic model, which Trump has certainly created, then those companies say, well, you know, we're not going to make as much money in Canada anymore. We're going to shut the plants. And that's what's been happening. And in terms of sales of vehicles in Canada, and again, this is, I think, critically important to know, Canada still has a large vehicle market. There were 1.9 million vehicles sold in Canada in 2025, which is eighth in the world. But because all of the
Where are they built? Where are they coming from?
They're coming from the United States, from Europe, and from Japan and Korea. They're all imported. Well, not all, but 90% of them, again, are imported.
Are the majority Detroit 3 vehicles?
Well, they used to be, but because of the tariff situation, that has changed, and it's now less than 50% coming from the U.S. currently, and more from Japan, Korea, particularly, and Europe. And, of course, not from China over the last few years, and we need to continue to return to this point and remember that a few years ago, the Biden administration was determined to keep Chinese electric vehicles out of the United States and impose a 100% tariff, and then leaned on our government to do the same thing. And we obediently imposed a 100% tariff on Chinese electric vehicles with the full support of the union Unifor and its president, Lana Payne.
Payne and Ford are absolutely in lockstep.
Totally. And Lana said that she would support any level of tariffs that were imposed on Chinese vehicles.
120%, 200%.
Whatever. and justified it with the worst kind of Cold War propaganda. And in 2024, Unifor submitted a policy paper to the federal government about what the policy should be, Canada's policy towards Chinese vehicles. And they quoted the China Labor Bulletin, which had been supported by the National Endowment for Democracy and other CIA friends.
Yes.
And Human Rights Watch, which has a similarly...
they're just flat US hostile to China. Yes.
Yes. And quoted those organizations with a straight face as being reputable and saying that they proved that China engaged in forced labor in Xinjiang, that they had inferior labor rights, and that they were not positive in terms of renewable energy, because they use burn too much coal and oil, and none of those things are remotely close to being true. They're the arguments that are used against China, but they're not valid. China is doing more to increase the use of renewable energy than probably all the rest of the countries in the world combined. They are,
and this is a matter of record, by the way. One can check it with neutral international bodies who recognize that fact.
Everybody will agree, in fact. And they've improved the standard of living, clearly, of people in China, of workers in China. And they have set out to build an automotive industry that is directed primarily, initially, at serving their own market and using government policy to see that innovative technologies were used, and that electric vehicles, which are now the majority of vehicles sold in China, became prominent. And we could learn from that. Instead
absolutely.
Of attacking them.
I'm sorry, but I have to cut you off there. You just said the magic words. We could learn something from that.
Exactly.
Tony Lea, Unifor, thank you very much, and talk to you soon.
Thanks, Phil.
This is Taylor Report, and Steve Fruitman, as usual, It's got some great stuff coming up.